Now, this week, plenty of incredibly brave individuals have been descending on the Capitol to take part in the London Marathon, which was a little bit of a hot one. But is running a marathon possible for anyone? And what does the training actually do to your body? Well, with us is one of those brave individuals, Christoph Schwiening, who is a physiologist and joins us after running the marathon himself. So, Christoph, how was it? Are you okay?
I'm fine. It was a bit of a struggle getting there. The coach didn't turn up, so we had a bit of a rush to get down there. But a wonderful day, a really lively atmosphere and great weather. So the support was fantastic. It was really, really positive.
You're saying the journey was harder than the marathon?
Oh, yeah, because, you know, a last-minute change of plan and suddenly you're shooting down the motorway in a car, not sure where you're going to park up and whether you're going to get there or not. And of course, are you going to get to the toilet stop in time? And that's really, for most marathon runners, a major thing.
Didn't bother Paula Radcliffe.
She
popped behind a tree.
I know she did.
Not today, obviously, but
It happens to an awful lot of runners. More runners lose time over a toilet stop than pretty much anything other than simply hitting the wall, I guess.
Is that because they're taking a lot of water in because they're worried about overhydrating, or is there a physiological reason? Is there a reason why you need the wee more if you run more?
Well, it's not so much the wee, I'm afraid.
It's number twos.
It's because the whole stress of running a marathon actually causes, if you've still got food in your digestive tract, to head downwards. And once it hits that internal sphincter and bounces around, you're on a limited fuse.
So what do you do? I mean, if you're lucky, you get to a loo in time. But dietary, is there anything you can do ahead of the marathon?
There is. I mean, every individual is different, but I know my gut transit time. So I know if I stop eating at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the day before a marathon, I'm absolutely fine. If I were to indulge, as the rest of the family were, in chips in the evening, then it's going to get messy out on the course. So,
and there was me thinking, when you see these athletes looking at their watches, that they're looking at their track time. Actually, they're not. They're looking how far it is till the next loo stop.
Yeah, entirely possible.
Wow, so that's a side of the marathon I hadn't even considered. But what I was thinking about is the temperature. It's been absolutely gorgeous today, but how did that affect the run, and what does it do to your body?
It's so multifactorial. The heat plays on just about every physiological system. I mean, the really big threat of the heat is that you increase the amount of sweat you produce, and so you're effectively running along as if you've almost been shot. You're losing out this fluid from your blood, the blood plasma. It's leaking away. Because it's being turned into sweat, and that turning into sweat isn't just a simple process. It's a highly trainable process. So if you're somebody who's trained to sweat a lot, then you can lose a sweat that really is very dilute. It's almost like pure water, and you can actually osmotically pull water out of your intracellular fluid compartment. So I didn't drink in today's marathon. I was mainly splashing water on myself, and I got faster as I went along. So the second half of the marathon, I finished it 1 minute faster than the first half. So this dehydration that you get as a result of sweating doesn't need to be performance limiting for the elites. They'll dump about 4 to 5 litres of water out of their body. So by the time they're finishing the marathon and hammering down the mile, they're actually lighter. And so they need less energy to go faster. While the guys at the back who are drinking a lot, they're heavier by the time they're finishing. And it's getting progressively harder and harder.
You said, Christoph, that it's trainable to control sweating. So in what way is it trainable, and to what extent can you constrain how much or how little you sweat then?
It's trainable in many different ways. So first, at the level of the skin itself, these sweat glands, and you've got millions of them across the surface of your skin, you can grow them and make bigger sweat glands. And the bigger sweat glands can not just push out more sweat, but they'll also reabsorb more sodium, so you lose less sodium. But also the drive to them, this thing that we call the sympathetic nervous system, it's part of your peripheral nervous system that you have little conscious control over. You can train that as well, so you get a big adrenal gland, and all of that supports this ability to sweat for prolonged periods of time and to not lose so much circulating blood volume.
So that's one way that training for a marathon changes. You get this sort of super sweater.
Yeah.
What else happens to your body? I mean, how does your body change to be able to do this?
So One of the other major changes that occurs is this increase in blood volume, which most people notice as a gradual fall in their heart rate as they do exercise. And what's actually happening is, there are multiple different theories, but the most likely is that as you exercise, you're actually pushing a protein called albumin out of the interstitial space, which is outside of the blood vessels all around your body.
Not the same stuff you get in eggs.
Oh, I'm afraid it is. Yeah. You've got it floating around. And it enters into the actual circulatory system and attracts water with it. And that builds a larger circulatory system. And that larger circulatory system means, of course, you can push more blood through your whole body to the skin to lose heat and also through the muscles. But you've got more fluid in the first place when you start off running. And so that loss of 2 or 3 litres of fluid during the course of the marathon has less of an impact.
But muscles themselves also change, don't they?
Absolutely.
The composition, the biochemistry of your muscles as you train.
Absolutely. And at that level, there are literally thousands of changes. And this is what makes predicting the time that you can actually do to finish a marathon so difficult. You change the energy that's stored within the muscle, the capillarization, that is the ability to get the blood down to the mitochondria. You get mitochondrial biogenesis. You're actually growing more of these powerhouses within the muscle, and you get this gradual change in what looks like the fibre type.
Right, so talking about training, running a marathon, I'd rather get into a spider's pit, I think. It fills me with fear. Can anyone learn to run a marathon, and how do you go about getting ready for one?
Everybody already has what's necessary to run a marathon. And Georgia, you could certainly run a marathon right now. It's just a matter of how long it would take you to complete a marathon. So could you run 1 kilometre every day? Yes, you could. Could you do it for the next 42 days? Yes, you could. You could run a marathon, but it might take you 42 days to do it. The question is, how long does it take to train to get to be able to complete a marathon within the time limit that the marathon sets? So the faster that you want to complete the marathon, the more training you have to do. And anybody can do it. You just simply have to do what gazelles do. They don't go to running school. You rarely see them sitting around discussing running technique. They just run. And really, that's all it is. It's not rocket science, I'm afraid.
It's not rocket science, but I still think I'd take the spiders. Thank you very much, Christoph Schwiening, for joining us. You've definitely earned your rest now.